As a way of honoring the gospel, let us stand. Today's reading is from the book of Matthew, chapter 5, verses 38 through 48. You know that you have been taught an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I tell you not to try to get even with a person who has done something to you. When someone slaps your right cheek, turn and let the person slap your other cheek. If someone sues you for your shirt, give up your coat as well. If a soldier forces you to carry his pack 1 mile, carry it 2 miles. When people ask you for something, give it to them. When they want to borrow money, lend it to them. We have heard people say, love your neighbors and hate your enemies. But I tell you to love your enemies and pray for anyone who mistreats you. Then you will be acting like your Father in heaven. He makes his sun rise on both good and bad people, and he sends rain for the ones who do right and for the ones who do wrong. If you love only those people who love you, will God reward you for that? Even tax collectors love their friends. If you greet only your friends, what's so great about that? Don't even unbelievers do that? But you must always act like your Father in heaven. The word of the Lord.
Amen. Please be seated. Zainab, thanks for reading that. That's a good passage. So there's a story I read this week in some of the commentaries about a New Testament professor who went shopping, got home, was putting the groceries away, and heard the little beep on the answering machine, knowing he's got a message. The message was from his 10-year-old daughter, who left this message that said something like this. So, Dad, I'm reading the scriptures this coming Sunday, and it's the text where Jesus says, turn the other cheek. Are there any other accounts on this? Is it just in that one gospel? Dad, no offense, but I think Jesus was wrong. That's good. That's so honest. Sometimes we read Jesus and we think, oh, surely he didn't mean that. And we look for loopholes. We look for a way out, a way to get around the difficult stuff that Jesus so often spoke of. With this particular passage from this longer Sermon on the Mount, scholars have wrestled with this particular passage because it's so difficult. And it goes against the grain of everything that we have been taught in our society. And some scholars say, well, Jesus said this to kind of set the bar high, knowing that we'd never reach it, and then we would depend on God's grace. Well, that's one loophole. Another said, well, you know, Jesus may have said that, but he didn't really mean it. Others pick up some obscure cultural traditions of the way someone would slap the cheek as an insult on one side with the back of the hand, and then it would be impossible to turn the other cheek because you can't get your back hand around to... It's doing some mental gymnastics to make that fit. Others say that Jesus was just preparing us for grace, which is always a good thing. Others hear the Sermon on the Mount in this particular passage and they say, well, in a perfect world, then maybe that could be applicable. But in the complexities and geopolitics of this day and age, Jesus really can't be taken seriously. Christians, we have the tendency to try and look for loopholes, even with the one we are trying to follow. There's a group of Christians that call themselves these days, it's a relatively new movement, Red Letter Christians. Have you ever heard of this? Red Letter Christians. Did you ever have a Bible that you would open up and all of Jesus' words were in red ink? Yeah, I grew up with one of those. And so these Red Letter Christians are trying to say, whatever is in red, we have got to take seriously and take Jesus at his word. trusting that there is wisdom there, trusting that God knows what God's doing when God sent Jesus to say these things, red letter Christians, take Jesus at his word for what he said. Now, if we're going to do this, we need to remember that we're eavesdropping on kind of a private, advanced class that Jesus is teaching in Christianity. This Sermon on the Mount, you remember in the beginning of this Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is with the crowds and then he takes a hike up the mountain, and only the committed followers went with him. People who were dabbling in following Jesus, they didn't want to make the trip. That's too far. It's too much of a hike. Those who were committed got to hear Jesus preach what he's saying in this text. So for those who are just starting out in Christianity, this text isn't helpful. It's probably too advanced. It demands too much. And we're not ready for that. It takes a real commitment. This is not Christianity 101. This is Christianity 501, to hear Jesus preaching like this. And he starts by saying, "You have heard it said, but I say." Or he starts out by saying, "The law says, but I say." And it's almost a litany. And when he says this numerous times, it's as if to say to the listener, "I know where you are, I know what you've learned, but I've got a new thing for you." It's a new consciousness. Some call it a Christ consciousness. And when Jesus is saying in this particular passage, "You have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say, if someone hits you, turn the other cheek and give them another shot." It's a totally new consciousness that has the ability to stop the violence in its tracks and change a consciousness from a violent consciousness to one that is much stronger and much more courageous than violence. Jesus says, turn the other cheek. He says, if someone asks for your coat, give them your coat. If we're listening to John the Baptist, we would say, give them another coat. Give your coats away. If someone says, would you walk with me a mile, i.e. in this culture, if the Roman soldier said to a Jew, you need to walk this mile and do this hard labor for me, Jesus is saying, do twice as much. Confound them with your generosity. Confound them with your graciousness. He says, if someone asks for a loan, give them a loan. If someone's in need, give something to them. Pray for those who persecute you. Greet those who are strangers. We may wonder what to do with this. This is a glimpse of the reign of God. This is a glimpse of God's hope for us. This is a glimpse of God's love for us. This is a glimpse of what might be possible if we really decide to follow Jesus. It's living into a new reality. And if we do that, we will discover something not only about Jesus, but about who we are. See, Jesus lived these things out. Did he not turn the other cheek? Did Jesus not give his cloak away? Did Jesus not walk the second mile when someone asked of him to walk 1 mile? Someone came up to him and said, would you heal my daughter? And he didn't do a remote healing. He walked to the home of the daughter. Did he not exemplify what it is to love one's enemies and to pray for those who persecuted him, even from the cross? Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Jesus lived this out, and the more we follow Jesus, the more we will resemble that kind of spirituality. But it is difficult. Jesus takes the worst that humanity threw at him, the worst, and showed us what to do with it, and not to respond with anger, not to meet hatred with hatred, but to respond to hatred and fear with grace, with strength, with courage, with love. Now, some of you may be saying, well, Jeff, that's very nice, but that's just not practical in this day and age and in the dog-eat-dog, tit-for-tat type of world in which we live. Let me just lift up a few brief examples of when this has worked and when the Christ consciousness has changed, this sounds grandiose, but it has changed the world. A week or two ago, Ali Irwin and I were having a conversation right here at the door about Germany. We had both lived in Germany just before the wall fell down, and when we were living there, we thought, this wall is going to be here forever. We were there in 88, 89, and we thought, this wall is going to separate these people forever. There was no inkling that a few months later, the wall would fall. When I was living in Germany, I met some East Germans and some East German Christians and spent some time in the East, spent some time in the West, and spent some time really looking at the nonviolent wisdom that Jesus spoke of, that Gandhi spoke of, that Dr. King spoke of. And I remember one of my teachers in nonviolence in Germany was training folks to protest. It was actually to protest against various things. One was nuclear weapons on their soil. One was nuclear reactors. One was protesting against the draft. And they trained their people that when the police would come at them, they would not fight back. And it took spiritual training. And one of the responses that they would say was to those who were attacking them was, "Nicht so, Brüder." Not like that, brother. Do you see the humanity that those who were trying to not be violent would call those who were perpetrating violence on them, brother? And they would say, "Not like that, brother." And for those brothers who had a conscience, they would realize, yeah, maybe there's something wrong about me beating up folks who don't have weapons, who aren't in combat. The churches on Mondays in East Germany would train their people, knowing that there would be Stasi in the congregation. The Stasi were the secret police. And I know pastors, Methodist pastors, who after the wall fell, after the Stasi records were made public, they looked at the records and they found out who in their congregations were Stasi members, who were reporting on them, who were telling the secret police what was preached about on Sunday morning and what was said in council meetings. Can you imagine what that did to congregations? Can you imagine the healing that still is needed in churches in the former Soviet Union? They planned and prayed together to say, if there is violence, Christians, we need to be the ones, these followers of Jesus, to get between the police and the protesters so that it does not come to bloodshed. Churches, Christian churches, studied this passage, the Sermon on the Mount, to say, if we're going to be faithful, we need to learn this and live it to save our country, to save our people. The protests that led up the weeks just before November 9th, 1989, when the wall was breached and started to be taken down, there were protests in Leipzig. There were protests in Plauen, where Otmar Schreiber was born. And these protests were infused with a Christian spirituality of Christians who got between the protesters and the military to keep them from violence. Years after the wall fell, there was an interview with some of the leaders of the East German government, and they said, "Why didn't you crack down with violence on the protesters?" And some of them said, "We were prepared for guns. We were prepared for violence. We were not prepared for prayer. We were not prepared for candles." Do you see how the way of Jesus confounded people who were inclined to violence but did not use violence? We don't have to go so far from our shores to see the Jesus ethic being lived out in the U.S. Dr. King and many Christians in Alabama, in Birmingham, understood this passage of Jesus, understood the spirituality of the Sermon on the Mount. And Dr. King said, "If we do an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, we will be a blind and toothless nation." Good wisdom there. Do you know that when people would protest in Birmingham, they would have to sign a covenant of nonviolence based on Jesus, based on the teachings of Jesus? And if they couldn't sign that covenant, they couldn't march. They couldn't picket. They couldn't participate. Dr. King knew that if this were not infused with a Jesus Christ consciousness, it would result in violence. Because that's what happens with human beings when left to our own devices. We respond to hatred with hatred, anger with anger. And a Jesus Christ consciousness can change that. Listen to what those in the movement then had to sign. "I hereby pledge myself, my person and body, to the nonviolent movement. Therefore, I will keep the following 10 commandments. 1, meditate daily on the teachings and life of Jesus. 2, remember always that the nonviolent movement in Birmingham seeks justice and reconciliation, not victory. 3, walk and talk in the manner of love, for God is love. 4, pray daily to be used by God in order that all men might be free." This doesn't have inclusive language. It was written in the early 60s. 5, sacrifice personal wishes in order that all men might be free. 6, observe with both friend and foe the ordinary rules of courtesy. Oh, wouldn't the world be different if we just maintained a sense of courtesy with all people? 7, seek to perform regular services for others and for the world. Doesn't this sound like Christianity? 8, refrain from the violence of the fist, tongue, or heart. Oh, people on the cable networks need to hear this. 9, strive to be in good spiritual and bodily health. 10, follow the directions of the movement and of the captain on a demonstration. I sign this pledge having seriously considered what I do and with the determination and will to persevere. This is from Why We Can't Wait, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I close with this wisdom from Dr. King that I pray will be lived out on the streets of Kiev and Caracas. And I pray that the wisdom of Dr. King and of Jesus will prevail in countries that are going through tumult and turmoil. Because the Christ consciousness can bring about more than change. It can bring about transformation, and the world so desperately needs this Christ consciousness. Dr. King writes, 1967, Christmas Eve sermon, "I've seen too much hate, to want to hate myself. And every time I see it, I say to myself, hate is too great a burden to bear. Somehow we must be able to stand up against our most bitter opponents and say, we shall match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. We will meet your physical force with soul force. Do to us what you will, and we will still love you. But be assured that we'll wear you down by our capacity to suffer, and one day we will win our freedom. We will not only win freedom for ourselves, we will appeal to your heart and conscience that we will win you in the process, and our victory will be a double victory. People of prayer, we need to be in prayer for the people of Venezuela, the people of Ukraine, the people of war-torn regions throughout the world. And I lift up this prayer as a possibility. We need to pray that God would lift up people in those barricades who will have a Christ consciousness, who will not return violence with violence, but who will seek a higher ground that might just transform oppressed and oppressor, and that might transform the world into a society and people that reflects the love and strength and courage of Jesus the Christ. May it be so in your world and in mine. Amen.